All financial advice provided on this show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The financial ideas and strategies discussed are only provided as a starting point for a conversation about money matters. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, or investment professional. All your financial decisions are yours and yours alone to make and subsequently are solely your responsibility. The information that is supplied through the context of the radio program and any repurposing of its content by the host or network is a combination and collection of solid financial investment understanding, opinion, and comments. This network, show, and its host are not liable for financial strategies, outcomes that you employ in any manner that result in any kind of loss. Shares of corporate sponsors may be the subject of buy or sell recommendations in Jay Taylor's newsletter in accordance with Jay's objective opinion.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. This hour will help investors fix issues and achieve personal gain. Now, here's your host, Jay Taylor.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm speaking to you from the borough of Queens in New York City. It is the 17th day of January, 2023. And sadly, this is the last day this show will air on the Voice of America Business Channel. However, this show is not going to disappear. You can continue to listen to a commercial-free version of Turning Hard Times into Good Times every Wednesday by going to the podcast page at jtaylormedia.com or at my YouTube channel at 3 o'clock p.m. every Wednesday, starting the 25th of January. That's 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. Unless you are notified otherwise, we expect to have a show every Wednesday starting at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. As this year gets underway, I'm very bullish on gold and silver mining shares as well as commodities and producers of those commodities. The creation of money lent out at zero interest rates has resulted in massive misallocation of capital into what I call dream companies with no earnings. For an indefinite period of time into the future, these companies, many of them, don't have any prospects of earning any money, but they have a dream. Now, with interest rates starting to reflect more accurately the true cost of capital, I believe investors will continue to move towards companies that produce life-sustaining goods and services and have strong earnings and balance sheets, and away from those fantasy, what I call dream companies or fantasy stocks. We have seen the start of this with commodities among the only really profitable sector in 2022, while gold served its purpose as a better wealth preserver than the U.S. Treasuries and equities. There are a number of companies I follow in my newsletter, but some of my favorites are I-80 Gold, Lion One Metals, Red Pine Exploration, El Oro Resources, Irving Resources, Labrador Gold, Newfound Gold, Puma Exploration, and Western Alaska. Those are truly companies that I think are on to some major discoveries that you're going to want to know about, and I think investors in those firms have a chance to make a lot of money in 2023. To encourage you to try my newsletter, and I haven't really pushed my newsletter that much in this show in the past, but to encourage you to try my newsletter, Jay Taylor's Gold, Energy, and Tech Stocks, we are offering a two-month trial for just $29, and you will receive weekly letters that report important information for the stocks that we cover in the letter. That is on a weekly basis, and then there is also a monthly letter that comes at the end of the month that summarizes where the markets are, and the specific stocks provides an update and a summary of where those companies are at the end of the month. To sign up, send us your email along with a credit card or check. Taylor Hard Money Advisors, 60032 72nd Street, Maspeth, New York, 11378. And don't forget to send that along with an email. The email, of course, is essential because we deliver this product by email. Or if you'd like, you can call our office here in New York City to sign up directly. That number is 718-457-1426, 718-457-1426. Call during normal work hours. Regarding today's show, I do want to thank Timberline Resources for sponsoring the show today. I expect Timberline and several other personal favorites of mine, as I just noted, to become sponsors as we go forward starting on the 25th of January. I've titled today's show, Searching for Hope in a World Gone Mad. I have two guests this week on my show. They are one of this show's most favorite guests, Michael Oliver, and the second is the Reverend Larry Bean. Michael is not only one of the best technical analysts I have ever encountered, but he is also the author of a book titled The New Libertarianism, Anarcho-Capitalism. And Reverend Bean is not only a strong Lutheran theologian, but also understands the virtues of a capitalist economic system tempered by an obedience to the golden rule. Michael Oliver provides a secular view as a libertarian and an Ayn Rand objectivist thinker. Ayn Rand observed tyranny in Russia during the bloody USSR communist regime. She was a brilliant thinker and has a great number of insights into how free societies function better than those under dictatorships. Michael and I are in agreement that America is starting to move very rapidly towards a cultural Marxist dictatorship where the so-called progressive wing of the Democrat Party is using propaganda to cause Americans to hate each other and turn against the U.S. Constitution that was designed to protect Americans against government tyranny. Unfortunately, it seems the Biden administration and most members of the Democrat Party are all in agreement with cultural Marxism, which destroys family and teaches mothers and fathers that their offspring belongs to the state, as does everything else that we think as our own private property. If you think that kind of dictatorship is impossible in America, you need to pay attention to what the World Economic Forum is planning for you. The founder of that one world government format, Klaus Schwab, envisions a time in the near future when you and I will own nothing and we will be happy. Climate change hysteria, as well as COVID-19 hysteria, are being used to condition us all to submit to the state. And if you don't take the World Economic Forum seriously, you should, because the Biden administration and most all Western governments now, with the possible exception of Hungary, are bowing at the knees of Klaus Schwab in passing policies that are aimed at forming a one-world government, with national sovereignty being given up in charge of a central worldwide authority. If you wonder why the Biden administration is fostering the immigration of millions of illegal immigrants into the United States, it is not only because they wish to gain total political power, but they also do not believe in the sovereignty of the United States government and our Constitution, which compels the president to execute the laws of our country, among which are the denial of illegal entrance to into the United States. But beyond that, the Biden administration also has put into effect various policies and or at least has espoused various policies that are really aimed at destroying our country as we have known it. Let me just give you some examples of what they've been doing. These are local officials, not necessarily national officials, but far-left activists. They're letting violent criminals out of jail to implement equity. Eliminating the Supreme Court is being endorsed, not actually then packing it so that its effect is eliminated. Eliminating the Electoral College system, eliminating two senators from each state, no matter a state's population. Eliminating the filibuster rules in the Senate, allowing non-citizens to vote. Giving illegal aliens more benefits than American citizens are provided with. Teaching kids critical race theory and denying our actual true history. Using the CIA to censor free speech guaranteed under the Constitution. And threatening to take away the Second Amendment so citizens can more easily be moved where and when and wherever government chooses to incarcerate them. I fear the COVID-19 mandates were a precursor to a future more akin to the imprisonment of citizens like those that occurred in Australia and New Zealand during the COVID days. There are many more examples of destructive policies, but the end results of all of these policies are to destroy America as it has been given to us by our founding fathers. As one who has lived 76 years, these changes are difficult for me to swallow. The ruling elite, including those Donald Trump referred to as the swamp, which includes all the U.S. intelligence apparatus, the entire military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned us about, and most of all the major media are increasingly using propaganda to lie and misinform the public about COVID, climate change, foreign wars, and the financial condition of America. We know now from the Twitter drops that the U.S. government was in fact censoring free speech using private corporations to front that action. Unfortunately, these kind of pathological policies are not only happening in America, but also in other countries in the West that we thought of as safe, democratic places to live, countries like Australia, New Zealand, and Canada, for example. The kind of censorship and removal of property and the right to protect, as orchestrated by Canada's Trudeau, has been an absolute travesty, and along with the related propaganda and examples that were common in the Soviet dictatorship during the Cold War, they are really almost out of the same playbook. But then I guess I shouldn't be totally surprised. Way back in the 1950s, the John Birch Society was warning that America would one day become a communist dictatorship. And now we know that is exactly what the radical left is setting out to accomplish, not only in the United States, but throughout the entire Western world, by their demands to give away the safeguards of liberty built into the Constitution and violent riots like those carried out by Antifa and Black Lives Matter in the summer of 2020, the left is not hiding their intentions of overthrowing the U.S. government. In fact, I believe they have largely achieved an overthrow already, given the massive sympathy that is within our government. So it's been an inside job. That's the way I view it. And I hope I'm wrong about that, but it sure seems to be. You might recall that when Senator Schumer warned Donald Trump not to mess with the CIA because they have 7 ways to Sunday to get back at you. I don't think that was an evil threat from Senator Schumer. And well, they managed to get Donald Trump removed, that's for sure. I wish we could depend on free market objectivist ideology, but one very powerful follower of Ayn Rand, former Fed Chairman Alan Greenspan, proved why you can't put your faith in objectivism or any other ideology. Talking about gold, which, when it backed the dollar, limited the amount of dollars that could be created, Alan Greenspan wrote the following, quote, "In the absence of the gold standard, there is no way to protect the savings from confiscation through inflation. There is no safe store of value. If there were, the government would have to make its holdings illegal, as was done in the case of gold. If everyone decided, for example, to convert all their bank deposits into silver or copper or any other good, and thereafter declined to accept checks as payment for goods, bank deposits would lose their purchasing power, and government-created bank credit would be worthless as a claim on goods. The financial policy of the welfare state requires that there be no way for owners of wealth to protect themselves. This is the shabby secret of the welfare statist tirades against gold. Deficit spending is simply a scheme for the hidden confiscation of wealth. Gold stands in the way of this insidious process. It stands as a protector of property rights. If one grasps this, one has no difficulty in understanding the statist antagonism towards the gold standard." End of quote. So, as it turns out, despite his understanding that debasing the dollar by printing massive amounts of money would destroy the American economy, that's exactly what Greenspan did. The Federal Reserve put was put in place by Alan Greenspan after the stock market crash of 1987, and the intention there was as soon as the stock market starts to really tank hard, the government would pump money into the system to allow money to flow back into the equity markets, and from there the economy would not suffer. Well, it's worked pretty well in many ways over quite a few years, but now we've come to the point where we've piled debt on top of debt, because remember, money that isn't backed by gold is created from debt, and so the debt keeps piling up, getting greater and greater now, so that the United States government itself could become insolvent. It has a debt to GDP of something like 130%. The only time it was higher was slightly short period of time during World War II. But getting back to Alan Greenspan, in 2001, Congressman Ron Paul had Alan Greenspan autograph a copy of Greenspan's 1966 article after Greenspan appeared before the House Banking Committee, of which Ron Paul was a member. Dr. Paul told me that as Greenspan autographed that newsletter, he asked Greenspan if he still believed what he wrote in 1966. And according to Dr. Paul, Greenspan reported back to him, he said, "Yes, I recently read it and I would not change a word," end of quote. In a conversation I had after that with Dr. Paul, I asked him how he thought Greenspan could reconcile his actions as a Federal Reserve chairman when he understood the destruction his actions would lead to. Ron said that Greenspan said that he was the only one who thought that way and hence would have no impact if he spoke out in favor of the gold standard. Of course, he was subsequently knighted by the Queen of England for doing such a great job for the global economy. So a morally challenged federal chairman understood his actions would lead to the demise of the United States through inflation, but rather than voice his intellectual concerns about our monetary system, or step aside and let someone else become an executioner of the American economy, he chose to accept the praise of kings and princes. Still, might there be some self-cleansing social mechanism or natural laws in place that could force a return to an honest monetary regime that would force a disciplined monetary system? For example, as Alistair MacLeod has been talking often about, how China, Russia, and the BRICS are putting into place a system to rival the dollar. That system, for example, is based on gold. Actually, China, Russia, and the BRICS are moving very quickly towards something to rival the dollar, actually to replace the petrodollar with the petroyuan. Michael Oliver has always been one who has argued that laws of nature will ultimately prevail over markets that are malfunctioning due to government intervention. So I can't think of anyone better to argue that point than Michael Oliver, who will be with me right after the break that is coming up in just a moment. The Reverend Larry Bean, a Lutheran Missouri Synod theologian, and one who is sympathetic to free market capitalism, will join me to provide his insights into the direction the West is heading and to help us understand how we can live joyful, peaceful, purposeful lives no matter what darkness we may face in the years to come. He will be with me in the final segment of today's show. The question is, if man cannot live by bread alone, what else is there? Don't go away. I'll be right back with Michael Oliver right after the break.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
Voice America programs are now available on your favorite connected device, including Amazon, Alexa, and Google Home. Through streams with Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio, listening to your favorite show is as easy as saying the show name followed by the word podcast.
Hey, Alexa. Play Finding Your Frequency podcast.
If that doesn't work, try adding on TuneIn or on iHeartRadio or on Apple Podcasts.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really happy to have our most favorite guest, Michael Oliver, with me today. Michael graciously shares his insights with us on the show, but if you really want to take advantage of all that he has to offer, all his insights and trading ways to help you improve your trading and your investing, I would suggest you go to olivermsa.com, olivermsa.com, to sign up for his very reasonably priced Momentum and Structural Analysis newsletter. It's one of those letters that I don't think I could do without, for sure. So I'm really highly recommending that you consider doing that. I want to tell you that you can buy Michael's book, which he's also we wrote quite a while ago. He says when he was just a kid. Actually, it's titled Anarcho-Capitalism: The New Libertarianism. And I might, if time permits, pick up a quote from that book as we talk here, because it sort of works into the theme of what I want to ask Michael about today. I should mention that although this is the last time the Turning Hard Times into Good Times will be aired on the Voice America Business Channel, Michael has agreed to join me every other week when this show will be aired on the podcast page at jtaylormedia.com and also on Jay Taylor Media YouTube channel. Welcome, Michael, and thank you so much for joining us again.
Good to be back, Jay.
Always good to have you with me. We had you on a couple of weeks ago, so I don't know, maybe this is asking you again what your views are as we go forward with the global economy, financial markets. What are your thoughts now?
A remembrance of a scene from a Monty Python movie. I think it was The Holy Grail. There's two guys, medieval movie, okay, visionist. There's two guards standing outside of a castle, and they've got their giant spears in front of them upright, you know, just to guard the castle gate. And one of them looks off in the distance, a mile away, and he sees two knights on horseback. And the knights have lances, you know, they're like they're coming for the castle. But they're miles away, you know, and so the guy sort of smiles to his other guard, and they snicker, you know, because these guys are so far away. And then they look at him again in a minute, and they're still way, way far away. And then within a second, they turn around, and the knights are upon them and impale them with the lances. It was all of a sudden, they're distance, boom, they're there.
Mm-hmm.
Call that chaos theory, where, you know, we move incrementally, trends do, and quite often they persist incrementally. You know, you from the beginning of a bull trend to the end of a bull trend or a bear trend. I think 2023 is going to be a chaos year, where that which is underway will be more rapidly underway in 2023, suddenly. You know, like somebody upsets the table, flips the cards upside down. Okay, that's the mental image I'll leave you with. You can almost throw the dart at any market I'm talking about where that type of outcome could occur, especially, I would say, with gold, silver, upside. I think the events that are cooking out there, they're all interconnected, although a lot of the financial TV channels don't make the interconnectivity. These fracturings that are going on are going to create wave effects that affect average people in the street. They're going to affect politics. Politics is going to affect them, vice versa. Certain markets are going to move in ways that people don't expect or further in the direction they don't expect and more quickly. So I think it's going to be one heck of a year.
Yeah. Well, I would think, and that image that you just gave us of those guys off in the distance and no need to worry seems to be kind of the way that people are taking the equity market now. They think probably the worst of it is behind us. A lot of people are thinking that, hoping that, expecting some sort of a soft landing by the Fed. We'll just take right off and off to never land where things are always wonderful. Equity markets, I don't think you're well, let's start with inflation and interest rates. I mean, what are your thoughts there? Because inflation.
The T-bond, the U.S. Let's talk U.S. government long-term end of the U.S. government bond market, the end that the Fed has least control over, 20, 30 years type stuff. ETF would be TLT, or look at 30-year T-bonds. They actually were in a downtrend on long-term momentum well before stocks ever turned down. They were in a downtrend back during 2021 anyway, the various times depending on the one I was looking at. And the stock market didn't engage to the downside until early 2022 by our metrics. Of course, by most people's metrics, it didn't engage till last summer. So the bonds were headed in being cratered. In fact, they had like a 35% down year last year, whereas the S&P had a 20% down year. NASDAQ had a 30-something percent down year. So the balanced portfolio concepts, stupid notions, 60-40, 60% stocks, 40% bonds will keep you balanced. Well, it submerged you on both sides. There was no help on either end. The only asset out there that might be listed in some people's orthodox portfolios would be gold, and gold was unchanged on the year. Silver up 3%. So the Fed fighting inflation thing is going to be really fun because a lot of people are cheering the downticks in gasoline prices.
Uh-huh.
A conspicuous factor. I agree. Well, we thought that months ago. We said, we get bullish on oil, by the way, at $40 now, back in 2020, and natural gas just above $2. But then everybody joined in, and it was the leader of the first up wave in commodities. That our first wave began in October 2020, way, way before Russia ever invaded Ukraine. In fact, if you look at the oil price chart, it peaked like weeks after the invasion. So there was, the entire advance in oil had already occurred before the border had been crossed. So people who, the governments especially, like to blame the inflation on these sort of extraordinary factors. Well, the real factor is central banks, monetary expansion, free money. Okay, now they've seen a downtick in some of these, their inflation metrics, and we've seen it in gasoline. So a lot of people think, oh, the Fed's sort of doing their job, right? Well, watch the Bloomberg Commodity Index. It just made a low, I think may have been its pullback low, at 107 and change. And last year, by the way, despite being in correction mode, the Bloomberg Commodity Index still had a 13% up year. Okay, so didn't the Fed didn't fight Bloomberg too much. But anyway, it was 107 and change. We're now trading over 112. It's like six, 7, 8 days later. That's a 4.6% gain. You go up another couple points in the Bloomberg, and it's going to re-engage to the upside, we think. But I think this time around, the leaders are going to be food. More likely going to be food, and energy will be a laggard upside indicator. So everybody's got their eyeballs on crude oil and natural gas and feeling better. They're not looking at sugar making new multi-year highs, or cattle making new multi-year highs, or corn and beans reasserting themselves. So I think that's where you got to look. And when that comes back, all the talk, the potential talk of, oh, the Fed's going to, they're going to back off a bit because inflation's cooled. What if the Bloomberg engages in a second up leg and it's demonstrable? What will that do to those people who think, oh, my gosh, the Fed's going to do more? Okay, so what are they going to do with their stocks? They're going to, you know, probably be even more frightened. So anyway, I'm expecting a second wave up in the commodity category. Now, that doesn't, the gold and silver don't depend on that. A lot of people think, well, you know, if commodities are up, gold should be up. Well, actually, it's not the case. Gold's in its own world. Gold doubled between 2015 low and the 2020 high, while the Bloomberg Commodity Index went down all during that time. So gold didn't need commodities. And then when commodities had their explosion, starting late 2020 to early 2022, gold was going sideways. So the correlation isn't real good. But gold and silver look like they're ready to reengage in a big way. They've crossed virtually every hurdle that we can lay down in front of them. They've crossed it. So we're highly positive on gold and silver, with silver being the leader. And we think that's going to be the stellar place to be next year, this year, rather.
Well, I wonder, Michael, you know, silver does have more demand coming out of the, you know, as an industrial metal, whereas gold is purely a monetary metal. Silver serves both functions. It has been lagging in the last couple of weeks. And of course, I know you take a longer term view of things. Gold seems, well, it's less volatile, isn't it? Gold goes down less when we're in a bear market, goes up less when we're in a bull market. So I guess if what you're talking about, if we start to see the whole commodity complex start to rise again, and gold goes up with that, silver is likely to outperform gold. And I would guess silver stocks, too, perhaps outperform gold stocks.
That would be our bias, and that's right. that's my personal outlook. And you know, it's period. I've never been so excited about a potential move as this one.
As the silver move. And I should say, folks, that in Michael's letter, he does tell people what he's doing. So it's, he's putting his money where his mouth is, at least in extreme example, extreme cases. And I've noticed that, Michael. So I do pay attention to that. I think all your subscribers probably do. Well then, okay. So what we've seen a lag in the gold and silver shares recently and from the metals. What, any thoughts about that?
Well, actually it's a lag in the sense that gold is sort of, you know, back pushing back near its highs, and silver's well up past the midpoint of its range of the last few years. Whereas you look at the gold miners, and they're nowhere near their highs of you know, the last couple of years. But actually, on a percentage basis, measuring from the recent lows of the summer, so find the summer low in some GDX, for example. Find the summer low even in an anemic large cap gold stock like a Barrick Gold. Is relatively anemic versus the sector. And you've had moves of 50% variety. Gold has had an 18% advance from its low. So on a percentage basis, the rally from the summer low has been far greater in the miners than it has in gold. But that's because they're catching up. In other words, they also had a far greater decline from the 2021 peaks down to the 2022 lows. So they're a wild child, and they swing bigger. Now, they're not as close to the old highs, but on the other hand, their recent several-month move has been far greater in the miners on a percentage basis.
All right.
And I think that will persist.
All right. Just one question on the commodities. Food, you think, is going to be the place to go. Are there any ways people can play that? I guess the commodity ETFs?
There's an ETF called DBA, and I can't attest to its ability to match what I'm seeing in the specific commodities, food commodities. There are ETFs basically for almost every single food commodity out there. There's a sugar ETF thing called cane or something. There's a soybean ETF, corn ETF, and so forth. And so there's direct ETFs to participate in that are futures-based ETFs, just like SLV is a silver bullion-based ETF. So there are direct ways to participate in the specific foods, yes.
All right. Well,
go ahead.
Yeah, just shifting gears a little bit of it. We'd like to get to your book, Anarcho Capitalism. In the conclusion of the book, you stated, and I quote, "Throughout history, men have found convenient arguments and mechanisms to suppress freedom. And the trail of history is both bloodied and atrophied due to that suppression," end of quote. Well, I would suggest that an excuse to go off the gold standard back in 1971, there was an excuse there. We had to finance, or some people thought we had to finance a war in Vietnam, and we had to finance socialism. We couldn't afford it, or we couldn't tax people enough and keep their votes without finding some other way to finance these government activities. You know, Johnson's Great Society and the Vietnam War, and so 1971, as gold was leaving the United States coffers, President Nixon unilaterally just decided the rest of the world is going to have to take our dollars without gold and nothing behind it. So given the precarious financial condition of the United States and its allies that we find ourselves in today, and an endless effort to just spend, well, there's no limit to the amount they want to spend. How many trillions, 33 we've got so far, on our that we are indebted to in the United States, to fund endless wars as we try to keep our empire going? And, well, how do you think this is all going to play out? And to what extent do you think things might have been different if Mr. Nixon hadn't separated gold from the dollar?
Oh, if he didn't, somebody else would have. You know, remember, he was a, quote, conservative Republican. So anyway, those definitions don't mean too much. Trump was also an advocate of zero interest rates and print.
He
pounded the table. And, you know, so, I mean, it's not a Republican or Democrat side, although recently some of the talk by some of the Republicans to abolish income tax, even. At least the idea got planted, okay? I suspect that in the turbulence we're going to see this coming year, and I'm not an advocate of this or that, please don't quote me on this, but that the fragmentation and the pain that people are feeling economically will feel. It's going to cause some wave effects that might just be sort of terms that are only just now being used, like no income tax, go to sales tax. In fact, that was suggested by, I think, Stephen Moore under Trump, that maybe that's an alternative. The dysfunctionality of the IRS. Well, if they can't function and collect the taxes, especially during hard times, let's say, where people simply can't file. They don't file because they don't have the money, you know, where those percentages go haywire, then even people who like the IRS will say, hey, it's dysfunctional. It's not collecting the money. We need an alternative. So I could easily see a reversion, not a reversion, but go to the sales tax notion, where every shopkeeper in the country is a tax collector, in effect. I could easily see that. All kinds of things that you might not expect to happen could pop up, I think, in 2023, especially at the point at which the stock market tanks through this year's lows. Now, right now it's spent since June. That many months, flip-flopping sideways, especially the NASDAQ 100, barely getting off the June low, In fact, if you look where the NASDAQ 100 is right now compared to the June low, it's almost barely unchanged from that low. Despite all this effort to hold, if it fails, I think the next downturn will psychologically and monetarily be a big event in terms of now. And then again, there's the problem of what if there's another commodity boom going on at that time? What is the Fed going to do?
Yeah.
And that's when the Fed's credibility goes out the window.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ever lose credibility in the Fed, then that belief structure is gone as well.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you can't fight the Fed. All kinds of belief structures could get fractured here, as they should, because they're unjustified belief structures.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think reality is about to bring the fist down on a whole lot of things, and many and varied things that we aren't even part of conversation right now. And it wouldn't shock me that a lot of the terms pop up in 2023.
Yeah.
Terms we don't expect to hear.
Yeah, when you try to fool Mother Nature forever, it can last for quite
a while, maybe.
I mean, you've always been sort of a believer in the natural natural law, things that are going. You try to fool Mother Nature beyond a certain length of time, Mother Nature's going to win ultimately, right? And so but it took a long time. The USSR was, from 1917 to what? It was 70 years or so. You can be in prison.
One human lifetime, and it fell apart. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right.
My book is based on the philosophical integration of Ayn Rand's philosophy, absent her politics, which was limited government, founding father type politics.
Mm-hmm.
And instead I supplant it with Dr. Murray Rothbard's libertarian political views, and I put them together.
Mm-hmm.
But in part three of Atlas Shrugged, part three, that's when the world comes apart. Where all the years of error that have been compounded with various wave effects, personal, governmental, corporate, and so forth, suddenly are revealed, and the whole world comes apart. Now, it's a healing process.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sometimes things that are bad should fail. They should fail badly. That's one way you get rid of them, just like the Soviet Union. It didn't last
self-destructive.
Long. It was dysfunctional.
mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think that's where we're sitting now with all kinds of forces at play that can bring that about. That's all.
Well, it could be a very uncomfortable year ahead of us, I suppose, Michael, but we'll look forward to hearing your words of wisdom going forward. We thank you so much again for being with us today, and we look forward to talking to you in a couple of weeks from now again. Thank you so much for being with us.
Look forward to it, Jay. Thank you.
Thank you so much. All right. All right, folks. Well, that is it for this week. That's it for Voice America, unfortunately. But you can, of course, listen to me at jtaylormedia.com and on my YouTube channel as well. So that is it. I'm not speaking rightly here. We have another segment to go. Reverend Larry Bean will be with me. He understands the virtues of a capitalist system. And he has recognizes the need to treat your fellow man the way you would need to be treated, and only then can capitalism work. So don't go away. We'll be right back with Reverend Larry Bean. And to start with, you're going to hear a few words from Tulsi Gabbard. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Timberline Resources is a mineral exploration and resource development company focused on gold discovery in the world-class mining jurisdiction of Nevada. The company's flagship Eureka Project hosts a significant gold resource and drill-indicated upside potential at nearby higher-grade targets. Timberline Resources trades in Canada under the symbol TBR and on the OTCQB in the U.S. under the symbol TLRS. To learn more about this district-scale asset with exciting discovery potential, please visit www.timberlineresources.co.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
As Christmas and Hanukkah celebrations come to a close, I'm sure you agree it's been kind of nice to take a break from the politics and the noise, the frustration and the insanity that surrounded us over this past year. Now, as we look ahead to the new year, we're reminded of the gravity of the challenges we face. We've talked about some of them tonight, and it's easy to feel hopeless when we think about that. What's most important to know is there is hope. Because as long as God exists, whose very essence is love, there is hope. And since God is eternal and will always exist, there will always be hope. God's love is the light within each of our hearts, and it's the answer to how we as a people, all children of God, no matter our background or our politics, can come together and heal our divides. Dr. Martin Luther King said, "Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that." Now, love is the most powerful thing. It's what we in Hawaii call aloha. It's love, respect, and compassion for one another. This aloha, this love, it's not just a feeling. It's not something that's weak or passive. It's a powerful force that motivates us to take action, to stand up for what's right, to fight for our freedom and for those we love. It's what motivates my brothers and sisters in uniform and I to put our lives on the line to defend the security and freedom of the American people in this country. It's what gives us the courage to speak the truth, gives us the strength to fight for what's right, and the humility to forgive those who've wronged us, overcome our differences, and move forward. Now, life is short. None of us knows how much time we have. So as we head into this new year, it is an opportune time to reflect on this truth, our purpose in life, where we can find true happiness, and how we are making the most of every day. I'm grateful to have experienced early on in my life this truth, that I was happiest when I was doing my best to be of service to God by serving others, helping my community. And I found that when I was chasing some selfish goal, I felt emptiness. This is where we find real happiness, putting service above self.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor. What you just heard was a clip from former United States Congressional Representative and presidential candidate Tulsi Gabbard. You heard Tulsi say that despite all the problems America is now facing, no matter how dark things may become, there will always be hope because God is love and He provides light in the hearts and minds of people who then can share that love with others by helping those in need. She quoted Martin Luther King as saying, "Darkness cannot chase out darkness. Only light can chase out darkness." I'm happy to have Reverend Larry Bean with me now, because he and I are both members of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and because I believe we both feel blessed to live in a country that has granted Americans extensive personal freedoms that have not been very common throughout history. I'm really happy to have him with me, and I felt very comfortable in inviting him to share his thoughts about Tulsi Gabbard's message of hope. Reverend Bean is a pastor in the New Orleans area at the Salem Lutheran Church in Gretna, Louisiana, and he is an online teacher at the Wittenberg Academy. He holds a master's in divinity from Concordia Theological Seminary and a bachelor's in history from Thomas Edison State University. Thank you so much, Reverend Bean, for joining me today.
Well, thank you, Jay. It's a great honor. Thanks for having me on again.
It's really good. We did have you on a number of years ago, and we'd like to talk to you more because I think you have a lot of things to offer. I know that you are also a person who understands that the freedom is really good for society, but of course, we do need to be responsible at the same time, or it doesn't work so well, we're finding out these days. Well, you just heard the clip from Tulsi Gabbard. Would you like to comment on what she said and add any comments of your own, perhaps?
Yes, I thought it was a profound quote. She is, I believe, a Hindu, so her understanding of what it means when she says spiritual is going to be different than what a Christian means. But I think maybe a way to reframe it to get beyond that sort of thing. I think maybe what she's really referring to is a common ethical vision. And, ethics grows out of Christianity. It grows out of religions in general. But in the West, our basic ethics about humanity and what humans are entitled to, what their rights are, how they should relate to each other, has been formed by our Western civilization, which in turn was formed by our Christianity. And so I think that if you sort of rethink what she's saying, is there are ethical values that transcend individual time and place. And so the values that we find in religion, especially in America and in terms of Christianity, an ethical system grows out of that, an anthropology, a view of humanity that should oversee our society, our social values, our government. All of those things should get back to the ethical system that we should have, a homogeneous, common, shared vision of ethics.
Mm-hmm. Well, then our founding fathers who gave us the Constitution, of course, the Declaration of Independence, do you think they were pretty well connected to that Christian view of morality then? And if so, to what extent has that impacted American culture, and, how is it going now? How far have we fallen from the ideals that they expressed?
Yeah, that is a great question and something we should reflect on. There's a lot of discussion over this term Christian nationalism now, mm-hmm. and a lot of debate over whether the United States is or ever was a Christian nation. I think part of the confusion is not all of the founders were Christian, mm-hmm. but they were all Western men who were influenced by Christianity, the ethics that grows out of Christianity. So let me give you an example of what I'm thinking, how I'm thinking on this, is Thomas Jefferson. He was not a Christian. He was a deist. He did not believe in the supernatural. He didn't believe in miracles. And he actually edited the Bible to edit out all of the miracles and things. He didn't believe in atonement or salvation or any of the doctrines of Christianity. But what he did believe in, what he embraced out of the Bible, was the Sermon on the Mount. Because here Jesus is defining, he's sort of laying out for us the ethics that grows out of the belief in Jesus as the Messiah, as the Savior. And so Thomas Jefferson was not a Christian, but he upheld the Christian ethic, which is why he was so concerned with individual rights and freedoms, because Christianity teaches that each individual is created in the image of God, and therefore we should not act in a hostile way against our neighbor. We should love and serve, love our neighbor by respecting our neighbor's rights. And so the early Americans were all over the place. There were Quakers, Unitarians, Congregationalists. There were pockets of Judaism, a lot of deism, along with the more, standard Christianity, like the Anglicans, Baptists, Presbyterians, Lutherans, Roman Catholics. But what they shared was a common ethical view towards humanity, rooted in Western civilization and with the Greco-Roman view of government infused with the Christian ethic. And so where have we fallen away from that? Well, we've seen a great diminishment of Christianity, of religion in general. The plurality among American people now, I believe, are what are known as nones, not N-U-N-S, but N-O-N-E-S, people uh-huh. who have no religious faith at all. And so what we're losing is our connection to our founders' view of ethics, their view of history, their connection to the Western civilization. Since the time of the American Revolution, we had Marx, who brought different ideas in terms of economics and society into the Western conversation. And that brings more of a totalitarianism and a getting away from liberty and human rights and the understanding that each person is sacred, in their mm-hmm. lives. And also education has changed a lot, too. We've gotten away from studying the Western canon into a lot of sort of social rhetoric or a lot of social engineering. Progressive education in the early 20th century replaced the classical model. And I think all of those things have kind of kind of conspired together to give us a very narcissistic culture, a culture that is almost nihilistic, increasingly so. And I think that's what separates us from the founders. And I think that was Tulsi Gabbard's kind of the thing that she's addressing culturally, how we got where we are today.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think she certainly, is concerned about the direction of things and realizes that we're at each other's throats. We're really, it seems as a lot of propaganda is causing us to go against each other, to hate each other. And she clearly, I guess maybe she is Hindu, but there have been things about her and some of the things she said recently, in addition to that quote that we just listened to, that has me believing she may, understand to a certain extent, at least, the Christian values that are part of our society as well.
Well, sure. I mean, being in the West, mm-hmm. being in our culture as she is, it's almost inescapable if you are grounded in Western civilization and history in these sorts of things. And really that's why I think religious minorities can flourish in the United States under a sort of Christianized ethic.
Uh-huh.
That is, would you rather be a Christian in a Muslim country or would you rather be a Muslim in a Christian country?
Yes. I think that's a pretty easy answer. The Muslim in the Christian country is going to have a lot easier go of it for the most part, I would think. Knowing some people that have lived in Bangladesh and other places, I would think that's true. So what are some of the issues that trouble you most then? Would it be this concept that you just talked about? Marx, one thing that we've known through the last century with the violent wars and millions of people that have been killed during wars, the dictators of the last century were, there was no place for God or any supreme being in their culture, right? I mean, people were persecuted. We think of Solzhenitsyn in the USSR and so forth. They talked about how the absence of God led to this violence, and there's that. I would like to ask you your comments on that. And also, we've been incredibly prosperous as a free country, a country that's free to carry out commerce. Free market economics have been very, very good. Capitalism has worked really well. Maybe just quickly a comment on those two topics.
Sure. The 20th century has been a real lesson for us in totalitarianism. When you see totalitarianism, the first thing they do is they oppress the church, oppress Christianity, close the churches, shoot the clergy. Totalitarian regimes such as those that are Marxist cannot coexist with human rights or with Christianity. It's a completely radically different worldview that is apart from our Western trajectory of the belief of that the individual human being has rights and that should be respected. So as those ideas infiltrate into our Western civilization, and we see it through education going on today, and especially in our public school systems, this, I think, is really the source of most of our problems.
We don't have a lot of time here, and so that's why I'd like to have you on again sometime in the future to expand on some of these ideas. But I would like to ask you before we conclude our discussion about the Wittenberg Academy. You've been teaching there, you say, for something like 10 years or so. What can you tell us about the Wittenberg Academy? Who is it for? Is there something there for listeners to this show, for example?
Yeah, absolutely, Jay. Wittenberg Academy is a Lutheran school. It is run by the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, or not run by it, but it is a organization within the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We are an online school. We began, I've been teaching for 10 years. I was there almost. I think I started the second year that the school was in existence. There was a need because we Lutherans have an emphasis on education. We've got second behind the Roman Catholic Church. We have the second largest parochial school system in the United States. But high schools are a different animal. They're kind of tough. So we started Wittenberg Academy to allow high school students to study from all over the country and even all over the world, and to do so and take advantage of the technology. We're a classical school, unabashedly Lutheran, And our families and our students love it. Our faculty are very devoted, and I'm just so delighted to work with the faculty, highly educated people on our faculty. And so we have 6th grade through 12th grade with actual faculty. Prior to 6th grade, we do offer a curriculum, a homeschool curriculum for parents to make use of. And we're improving things all the time. So if people want more information, go to wittenbergacademy.org. That's WITTENBERGACADEMY. And you can learn more, or people can contact me. You can contact me at larrybeane@gmail.com, LARRYBEANE@gmail.com. And I'll be happy to talk to anybody about Wittenberg Academy.
I want to thank you very much, Reverend Bean, for being with us today and sharing your thoughts on America and where it may be heading, and what we need to do to try to do our part to make things better. It's really great to have you with us. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Jay. What a privilege, and blessings to you.
Thank you very much. Well, folks, that is it for this week. Again, I want to thank my engineer, Matt Widener, for all the great work he did on this show on this show's behalf, as well as Tacy Trump, my producer, for making this show happen. And I want to thank all of you for listening over the past 13 years and 9 months. Remember, we will be continuing this show, but on a different format. You need to go to J. Taylor Media at 3 o'clock p.m. New York time, jaytaylormedia.com, or to my YouTube channel, which is also J. Taylor Media. So go there at 3 o'clock. We will be live at 3 o'clock, 3 p.m. New York time, on Wednesday the 25th. So that's it for this week. And for now, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.